magical place we could go. So close your eyes and make a wish for the skies with the angriest, flappiest birds, and the seas with ridiculous fish. The Dutch Arcade Show is here again. It's Friday night and I'm with my friends, Eli, Jared, and Mike most of the time. Mike, come on, let's go to the Dutch Arcade Show.
I'll give you a slink when you're ready to start.
Okay. Hey, what is up? Welcome to the Touch Arcade Show, episode number 393, coming at you live on Friday, April 5th, 2019. I am Jared, and with me is Eli. Together, we are the hosts of this podcast. And if you're listening to this podcast and wondering what a Touch Arcade is, first of all, I want to know,
Touch Arcade?
What series of events led you to listening to a random podcast on the internet?
Like, well, it was on. I was waiting in the dentist's lobby,
and that would be
playing this weird podcast.
Yeah, but I will let you know that if you are not familiar, TouchArcade.com, the biggest mobile gaming website on the entire internet, full of news, reviews, previews, editorials, and this very podcast. Everything we do is primarily supported through Patreon, so if you like what we're doing, please consider supporting us at patreon.com/touch arcade. And additionally, you can support us by way of doing your Amazon shopping through our affiliate link, toucharcade.com/Amazon. And with that out of the way, what's going on, Eli?
Do you want the local drama? Because, man, do I have fucking humdinger for you.
I think I saw you tweet or Facebook about something like...
So I don't know if this has made its way outside of the Chicago news cycle yet, but like, so I live in the city of Aurora, and yeah, we are in this absolutely mind-boggling situation where... So there is this gang in the 80s called the Ripper Crew, which were four dudes... that were responsible for like 18 murders, kidnappings, rapes, disappearances, some rape then murder situations, or I don't, like, you know, a lot of really bad shit. And they like mutilated all the bodies, and then like I don't want to get to it. It's like,
right.
Imagine all the worst things you could do to a corpse.
Yeah.
That's what these guys did. So okay, four dudes. One was executed, two are serving life sentences, and the third, through some like weird legal technicality or like an evidence mishap in his trial, was sentenced to 70 years, appealed, and just got out because of like the, I don't even remember, I don't, something to do with like chain of custody of evidence or something that, like, you know, shouldn't be a problem, because like it's clear that like these four dudes like killed a lot of people and should be in jail forever, but because of like some weird technicality is like, well, this guy actually is getting out right now.
That's always great.
So he was looking for a place to stay in the Chicago area for some reason, and basically every other city nearby was like, nope, like past, like a hot potato, right?
Wow.
And then like this halfway house in Aurora, it's like faith-based rehab center thing, was like, oh, we'll take them. And
everyone deserves a second chance, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's like one of those things, like I'm super torn on it, because like, okay, I mean, I agree everyone needs a second chance, and like you got to put your faith in the justice system and all this stuff, but like it's kind of a weird, uncomfortable thing when it's like you're faced with that and a dude that the other crazy thing is like he's registered as a sex offender, but not a high enough level that he's like restricted from being around like schools and stuff like that.
Wow.
So like it just to the people of Aurora, it feels like they have just like the justice system has like failed on every level. That was my cat just falling off my desk.
I was wondering, the earthquake.
So it just seems like the systems in place that should deal with like keeping these people away from society have like failed on every single level. Yeah. And so dude's here, he's like staying within walking distance from my house, which is really weird. I went to the gym this morning and drove past like where he's staying, and there's like all these protesters out.
Oh
and all this other stuff. So we'll see what happens.
Well, I think we've touched on this before because we both are like, you know, Forensic File heads and stuff like that. And it's always super shocking to see people that get, you know, like crazy murderers that get out in like 15 years and stuff. And
you're
like, how is that a thing? And, you know, I'm all for second chances and stuff, but kind of to a certain extent, like if you were like, oh, when I was younger, I was drunk and got in a bar fight and accidentally, you know, punched a guy out and it killed him or something like that. Like, that's a little more understandable than like, well, we raped and mutilated and murdered a whole bunch
sometimes of people. Sometimes not in that order, even. Like,
yeah, and like, that's like very conscious, like you're a crazy murderer psychopath.
Yeah.
And I don't quite know that you can come back from that or you can be rehabilitated to the point where you're going to offer anything good to society. So I would rather just see those people stay in jail forever or whatever.
Well, so what's irritating is that, like, so on our local Facebook, like, next door equivalent, like, you know, you've all these people flipping their shit, which in my opinion is justified. And there's all these other people that, like, don't really know what's happening that are like, what's the big deal? Why are you guys bullying this guy so much? Like, because he cut holes in people and, like, raped them? Like, I don't know. Like, that seems justified to be upset about.
I would not want that person living near me either.
Yeah.
So that sucks.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation.
Yeah.
And, like, the crazy part is, like, so there's, like, a 60 to 90 day window where he, like, transitions out of this halfway house he's in right now. And there's just, like, at large in Aurora, which is, like, so crazy. I can't even.
Well, you know, the other shocking thing I always see on Forensic Files is, like, they finally caught the dude that murdered these people. It turns out that, like, 10 years ago he murdered someone and got convicted but got out in 5 years.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and it's, like, who let that guy out and he murdered people again? Like, isn't there supposed to be somebody that can recognize that potential for happening?
I don't know, man. It's crazy.
Like, this guy goes nuts again and starts killing people, then what are you going to have to say to that, you know?
So it's like, basically all the residents that live locally, like the mayor of the city, the whole city council, like all the aldermen are like just flipping their shit about like how to deal with this. So it's been a fun week locally as far as local news is concerned.
I guess keep us posted on how that goes.
Yeah, I guess if you're just like, yeah, I don't know what happened to Eli. I haven't heard from him in a while. You should probably just assume I've been.
I'll send a welfare check your way.
Please do.
Surprisingly enough, if this is the first time you listen to this podcast, this is probably a weird foot to get.
It could be a Forensic Files fan podcast, so I feel like we could pivot into that super easily.
Could do that.
Whenever Jared and I are staying together at conferences, it's like the first thing we do is like, all right, turn on the TV, turn on HLN, we're watching the Forensic Files marathon.
HLN, which is 99% of the time Forensic Files, and then the other 1% is like the same news bits over and over.
A very annoying morning show that's like 5 seconds of content that just like infinitely loops.
Yeah, that's always fun. But much to your surprise, possibly, this is actually a podcast about mobile gaming. So let's do that smooth transition into mobile gaming talk from the murder stuff. First up, we've got some cool news that includes what you're working on now, in case people are unaware, Game Club. Game Club seems to be off to a pretty hot start, and everyone's talking about it.
Yeah, surprising.
And, your aim is to kind of bring back some of these older games that we've lost over the years, these older iOS games.
Latest, it's pretty crazy, like, how much stuff is out there that is just, like, gone off the App Store. Like, particularly as I've been, like, you know, posting on Twitter, like, hey, you know, like, you know, if you've got any favorite games, like, let me know and I'll see what I can do to get them back. And, like, people are tweeting at me all this shit that I'm just, like, this is something that in my head I played, like, a year or two ago. And I look it up as, like, oh, wait, no, this came out in 2012 and it's been off the App Store since, like, 2016.
Yeah, the time paradox is crazy when you think about how long ago some of these things actually were, when they feel like, man, wasn't I just playing that?
Yeah.
It's kind of shocking, too, when I sit down and really think about it. Like, something will come to mind or something will get mentioned on the forums or something like that. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that game. Like, I completely forgot that thing even existed and I really want to play it again now. And oh, look, it's no longer available or whatever. And that's always like super disappointing too. But there's so many games out there. That if you really sat down and listed them out, I mean, there's hundreds of potential awesome games to bring back.
And like games that aren't even necessarily like off the App Store entirely, but just like haven't been updated in so long that they just like kind of suck.
Yeah, there's a lot of devices. That too.
Like there's a ton of those too. So
yeah,
yeah, that's what I'm doing. We're actually, it's pretty cool, like getting the traction that we've had, because we had this week I signed the first game that 100% originated from like people that weren't me on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Like pestering developers, being like, hey, check out this game club thing. Like, this is really cool. It'd be great to have your game on this. I'd love to play it again. Yeah. And that, like, and if it just like came to me and I was like, okay, like, here's the license agreement.
Yeah, that's really awesome.
Pretty sweet. So that was Forget Me Not. It's a Touch Arcade podcast exclusive.
Ooh, exclusive with a triple X.
Exclusive.
Forget Me Not is badass. For people that don't remember, that's, man, that's another oldie too. That's like 2009, well, I think. So
that's the perfect example of like, holy shit, like that game came out that long ago that it's like, like, so Forget Me Not like ran its entire course on the App Store, and to the point that like it's no longer in the App Store. The developer doesn't even have a Mac to update it with. Like if he even wanted to like put it back on the App Store anymore.
Yeah.
And he's been working on like some, like Forget Me Not remix sort of thing that's being sold on itch.io right now for $7, I think, that he's hopes to bring to like console downloadable stuff some point. Like whenever he's
so having like a workable mobile version too is kind of, that can help with advertising for, you know,
I
console
think so, versions
and stuff. So but yeah, Forget Me, it's kind of like a really neat take on like Pac-Man, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
And it was one of those games that back during that time, 09, 2010 possibly, was like really beloved in like the hardcore indie developer community too. It was like one of those games that everyone kind of,
it was like
all, it's like, yeah, this is genuinely awesome.
The Desert Golf of like 2010 or whatever.
Yeah.
I think is a good way to put it. Yeah, so I mean, that was just really cool to have like that all come about, because I don't remember what I was doing. I was like, I went to the gym or was working on something else or had my dogs outside and just like get back and like look at Twitter. It's like, oh, cool, you guys did the entire life cycle of bringing something into Game Club for me. That's neat.
Well, hopefully that becomes more of a normal occurrence as this, you know, continues to grow and stuff, and people just know that'd like they neat. Can they can come to you for stuff like that.
Yeah.
Beyond that, you've officially announced, well, I guess this was announced a while ago, but Inkabodo is the next game coming out in early access. So that'll be coming Monday.
Monday, yeah. We do. So if you're not on our early access list yet, if you go to gameclub.io, you can put your email in and get an email usually sometime in the morning on Monday with just a test flight link and stuff.
Yeah.
And all the other previous stuff. So basically just like trying to make sure that like, because these games are so old and being updated, like, you know, a lot of these games were last designed with like the iPhone 4 in mind, you know, so like just kind of trying to get as many people testing them as possible. So like, because we already found some like weird situations where it's like, oh, I have an iPhone 7 and I'm like, I'm not updating the iOS 11 yet. Yeah. So but and the game like crashes on load and like iOS 10 on an old phone. And it's like, that's something that I would never have.
There's so many weird circumstances that can pop up that you don't genuinely know about until you have like a good amount of people testing or whatever. Do you get a good amount of feedback on these early access games?
Sort of. It's kind of awkward because a universal thing that has been popping up is a lot of the stuff that is like modern quality of life stuff that is now just taken for granted. Like, for instance, like allowing you to listen to a podcast or something like that while you're playing a game. Yeah. Like that was a thing like back in the day. Remember that? Like, the swipe to close thing as challenging because like these games were all designed without, like the kind of like invisible bubble towards like the bottom center of the screen that you kind of just like can't touch because that's how you close apps now.
Yeah.
And just like other sort of things like that have been kind of challenging to kind of like figure out like, okay, like how much of the original like feel of this game could we retain while still having it like not mess with like the iPhone 10 app closing and, you know, a bunch of other weird shit that developers didn't need to deal with back in 2011 or whatever.
Right. Well, that's cool. Yeah. I'm glad that the service seems to be growing and becoming more popular, more talked about, and really stoked about everything going on with Game Club. So
we're busting ass working on updating all these games and all that fun stuff. So
very excited to play Inkamoto again too. That was a really cool kind of a puzzle platformer sort of game, but it's got like this real soul behind it,
like Mario Galaxy style sort of gravity system
job. But it has this weird, it's like sort of like you see this bright, happy, like sunshine character, but it's sort of like a dark game. It's sort of like an unsettling sort of universe and stuff. And just a really interesting game. I wouldn't be surprised to hear a lot of people be like, oh, I never even played this, or I never even heard of it, even when it was new, or you know, whatever. It's definitely like a underappreciated sort of gem.
Well, that's been kind of like the neat thing too, is that like what I didn't really expect so much with the launch of the early access program was I would assume it would be like a lot of like hardcore old school iOS people like you and I. But it's been kind of an interesting split in that it's like people that like really appreciate, you know, games like Sword of Fargo, because like, oh man, I had this back, you know, in 2009. I loved it on my iPod Touch, and then like it broke and I've been so bummed. And but there's also like an equally large amount of people that are like, oh hey, cool, like I have never seen this before, and it's really cool. So it's neat. Like, hopefully I can keep up the momentum with games that people genuinely seem to feel are fairly timeless.
Yeah.
Which has been the case so far. So,
yeah.
I don't know. Let's see.
Good stuff. Good
stuff. Game Club. Well,
we'll be looking for Inkamoto Early Access on Monday. If you haven't signed up already, gameclub.io is the website.
You can just type Game Club into Google. I've done a pretty good job at SEOing that.
It rank up there.
Yeah, inside English-speaking countries, specifically, you should be able to type in Game Club. I would be interested, if you don't see Game Club first, what do you see first if you search for it? So just tweet at me, I guess, at HODAP if you're
Game Club. What else could that mean?
Well, there's a cryptocurrency Game Club thing that's gameclub.com, which is annoying. But they launched that like a day before we were like, all right, I got everything locked and loaded.
Shut up, real.
Yeah, that's pretty nice. Sucks.
Okay, moving on. We've got a another Pokemon Go Fest coming to U.S. and Europe and Asia.
13th to the 16th of June, right?
Yeah, it looks like it. And then, sorry, I didn't have this on my screen at the time we were talking about it. What's the history of the Pokemon Go Fest is that the first one was like a awesome disaster that's fun to talk about, and that was back in 2017. And that was when they did that one, that was the only fest, right?
Yeah.
For the entire world, it was like, hey, come to Chicago.
Yeah, it was
gonna have a Pokemon Go Fest. Everyone showed up and it was kinda like a big disaster.
It was the clusterfuck of clusterfucks.
Yeah. And then last year they actually tried another one and it turned out better, but what I thought was interesting is you went to that one too, but the funny thing about the original one was like, no, you know, it's a connected game, you have to have internet to play, and so like the internet didn't work at all, and that kind of caused everyone to sort of mill around and not know what to do and end up chatting each other up and stuff like that. And then last year they figured that out, had great internet connection, but the byproduct of that was that nobody talked to each other.
Yeah, it was weird.
Everybody was head down playing Pokemon the whole time.
It was weird. Also, like, as far as the festival was concerned, the first year that was disaster was, like, way better. Because they had, like, a main stage where shit was going on and, like, all these food vendors and everything else. Mm-hmm. And, like, this one last year was, like, there was, like, two food trucks that were completely and totally fucked the entire day with a line that was so long. It was like one of those lines you look at and you're like, I'm not even going to bother with that. So hopefully all fingers crossed that this year will be the year where they strike a balance between the game works and there's shit to do. That's not like be glued to your phone.
Right. We'll see. It's interesting that they, and this has been quite an evolution of this thing, but it's also kind of crazy to show how popular Pokemon Go still is, that a lot of people are looking forward to this stuff. So
what seems crazy to me is that they're still trying to do this whole like this is a festival that takes place in a very few specific locations.
Yeah.
When like it seems to me like with a globally connected game, it makes way more sense to just have it be like, all right, guys, you know, June 12th or whatever the Saturday is around, like this, like peak Saturday in the summer, whatever that day would be, it's like this is Pokemon Go Day.
Yeah.
Like, everyone that goes out and plays Pokemon Go is going to have all this exclusive shit just for participating in Pokemon Go Day. You know, like everything else, to kind of like reboot the good old days of all sorts of people wandering around the park and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Yeah.
I think that they could pretty easily, like, even kind of human curate that to some extent, mm-hmm. and be like, okay, let's do, like, you know, like, let's make an Excel spreadsheet of, like, you know, the three biggest cities in, like, every state or something like that, or however you want to do it. And then, like, okay, like, pick that out. Like, all right, this is the main park. We're going to drop, like, a waypoint, like, here, and here. And that'll be, like, the main hub of Pokemon Go Fest, like, you know, Sacramento or whatever. You know?
Right.
Because it's just, I don't know, like, it's coming to Chicago is a big hurdle to participate in a video game that really you could have just as much fun anywhere.
Well, I think, you know, they do the community day stuff, which actually there's one coming April 13th. So about a week from now on Saturday, and which is sort of like that, which is sort of like, hey, you know, everyone go out and play wherever you are, and we're all kind of in this together. But it's not quite the same as like a Pokemon Go Fest, where it's really like a festival sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I feel like they could definitely blend the two a lot better to do sort of like community day stuff, but more of Pokemon Fest feel with bigger events.
Yeah, it's just like so strange though, with like a globally connected game like this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, maybe you get like bonuses for coming to Pokemon Go Fest, but like you shouldn't have this like extreme sense of FOMO if you're like just some kid that really likes Pokemon Go that like can't get to Chicago, you know? Like,
Yeah, how easy is that for, you know, most people? So.
That seems weird to me. So I guess we'll see. If I can get a ticket, I'll definitely go check out the shit show.
Yeah, that'll be, let's see, the Chicago one's June 13th to 16th. There's one in Dortmund, Germany, July 4th to 7th. And then there's going to be one
in... You should hit them up and be like, hey, I'd love to cover Pokemon Go Germany if you want to fly me out.
And then the Asian location one hasn't been revealed with dates or anything yet, but you can go to PokemonGoLive.com for, you know, all that sort of info or whatever.
So have they revealed, like, it's a four-day thing, but do you buy, like, individual day passes, or do you just get a pass for the whole weekend?
It sounds like this time around you're going to be able to buy tickets through the Pokemon Go app, which is kind of interesting. Mm. But those are limited to one-day tickets, one per person. So I'm not really sure how it's going to go if you're like – I mean, if you're going to travel from far to do this, you're going to want to go to like every day, I would think.
I would think so too.
Or at least a couple of days or whatever. So I'm not really sure how that's going to work.
I feel like last year was individual day passes.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense, but it would also suck to do all that and be like, well, I only got one day ticket. Yeah, so
I only get to go on Thursday or whatever.
And everyone knows there's nothing to do in Chicago.
Absolutely. I mean,
no good restaurants.
No food to eat. Nothing to see. We have no museums.
Right. So anyway, Pokemon Go Fest coming soon. We'll see how it turns out this time around.
Fingers crossed for not a complete clusterfuck.
Moving along, this was one of those instances where I couldn't believe that this amount of time has passed.
Yeah, I mean, it loops in with our discussion of the Game Club discussion. Yeah. I was like, holy shit.
So the original Monument Valley is 5. It came out 5 years ago as of yesterday.
It's actually going to kindergarten or first grade. Kindergarten.
It's only 20 years away from being able to rent a car. It's just growing up so fast right in front of our eyes. And, so I don't know. I always think of Monument Valley. I'm like, yeah, that was a couple of years ago. Like, no, it was 5. So to celebrate, they released this really cool little update, where in each of the original 10 levels, you can collect a different outfit for, the main character Ida to wear. And these outfits are all cool things you would recognize, like characters from the game or the crow people. And then most exciting of all is there's one that lets you dress up as the totem, which is cool. And play through the levels as totem. it's not like life-changing extra content or anything like that, but it's a fun little kind of celebration. And
what's wild is at PAX, like the I Am 8-Bit people were moving Monument Valley merch.
I totally believe it. Yeah, everything about this game, like... I have one of the stuffed little crow people, and I proudly display that. Actually, you can probably see it in the background.
Except the bad guy.
Yeah, they're little figures and stuff. All the little characters are all super cool and collectible. And just the look of the game itself, it's like you can just print, you know, various screens from the game and hang them in your house, and people will think you have really good taste in art.
They actually have done that. They did a series of prints that were literally just screenshots.
So, yeah, it's not
But I think that was, like, one of the original, like, design challenges of Monument Valley. It was, like, how do we make a game that, like, every screenshot looks like a work of art?
Yeah, they did that. They had that as one of their requirements for designing the game, which I thought was really cool. But so anyway, this little update is, like I said, it's just kind of these cosmetic little costume things you can collect. They're not super hidden or anything like that. You'll find them just through playing through the level. But it's a neat reason to revisit playing those original levels, because it had been a little while for me. And, you know, you can play through the game in like 45 minutes or an hour. So when I was checking out the new update, I just ended up playing through the whole game again, and it's just still fun. Like, even when you know the answer, there was a few where I was like, I don't quite remember what to do here, and you kind of had to refigure it out or whatever. So I thought that was really cool. I remember one of the only complaints about Monument Valley when it launched was that it was too short.
Yeah.
But I think
all the people being like, oh, $5, and I beat it in an hour. Totally, I'm burnt.
Yeah. I don't even remember if it was five. I think it was three or something like that. But anyway, it kind of goes to show, too, though, that, like, you know, repeated playthroughs can be enjoyable, too, you know, given enough time. All the more reason to keep these iOS games around and preserve them from vanishing, because it can be fun. You know, what a shame it would be is if in 10 years you can't go back and play Monument Valley.
I don't think that will ever happen, because I don't think you could find a game on the App Store that Apple as a company loves more than the Monument Valley series.
Yeah, it was an Apple Game of the Year, Apple Design Award winner. The sequel launched exclusively during an Apple iPhone event.
If you pay attention to the Today at Apple tab on the App Store, it kind of seems like if they're ever like, shit, what are we going to post today? I don't know, just run another Monument Valley story.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, cool.
But pretty cool. Monument Valley's 5, so let that sink in. And definitely go check out the new free update, play through those original 10 levels again.
I mean, this seems a good reminder, too, to check out the sequels if you never fiddled with those.
Yeah, there's actually a few expansion packs for the original. One of them's paid. The other ones, I believe, are just free. And then
do you remember if you can get the the original Monument Valley, when they started doing the expansion pack stuff, I think the first expansion pack was the, whatever you call it, the parentheses red.
The product red stuff? Product red, yeah. Those are still in there.
Remember back in the day, like, that was a limited time. Like, so all the apps went red, and they're, like, across the App Store, like, all the featured ones.
Yeah.
And they did a in-app purchase expansion pack that you could only get through that. And then, like, when it updated to, like, not be a product red game anymore, like, you couldn't buy that anymore, and people flipped their shit.
I remember, I only know that I have it because I got it, you know, when it came out, and I've never deleted this game or whatever, but it shows up in the list, so I'd be curious to know if somebody that knew they didn't have it, or maybe a fresh install, if you're still able to freely get it. Or if it even costs money, I'm not sure.
I thought that was, like, a really, really cool promotion, because, like, so rarely in the world of, like, digital distribution do you ever see any level of scarcity on anything, you know? So it was like, I mean, don't get me wrong, like, I understand how annoying it would be if it was like, oh, man, my favorite game is Monument Valley. They released the expansion pack and I didn't even know about it.
I didn't know,
And I missed it. But at the same time, like, it's kind of cool, like, if you did get in, it's like, oh, shit, I got this, like, really neat exclusive limited time thing.
You know, that's how everything else works. Look at your Supreme infatuation.
Hell
that's how they roll.
Hell yeah.
So, there's definitely a couple DLC packs for the original, and then Monument Valley 2 itself is really awesome. And, gosh, I hope there's a 3 someday. We'll see.
Ooh, yeah, I wonder if they're going to make another Monument Valley game.
So, anyway, this is kind of cool, unexpected news. The game Minit, M-I-N-I-T, which I only know from launching on Switch, but I guess it's on, you know, Xbox, Steam, and all that good stuff, too, is coming to mobile. And that's from one of the people from what's it called?
Devolver Digital?
No, the Lambeer.
Oh yeah, JW.
Yeah. This was like one of his side projects or whatever. And I guess it's a platform where you play like 1 minute at a time, 1 minute levels, something along those lines. Oh yeah, 60-second lives. So yeah, sounds like a really cool concept. And I remember everyone talking about it when it hit Switch and being like, oh, should I check that out? No, I have 35 games that I still need.
Yeah, I'm getting the same. I feel bad about it because like, I remember how annoying it was when developers would release stuff on mobile and people were like, I'll wait for a price drop.
Yeah.
But it's like, God damn, dude, my Switch backlog is bananas.
Yeah, I'm working on trying to work through that.
I was super stoked. I've been super stoked for that Yoshi game forever that just came out, the Yoshi's Crafted World. And like, I was like, I don't even want to buy this now because I'll just wait for like next holiday sale and probably will then not even play it when I get it then.
Right. No, I've already done that with a bunch of games that are like half off and you're like, damn, for $7, I'm definitely buying this. And then I still haven't, you know, launched it or whatever.
Yeah.
But whatever. It's a problem. But the cool thing about mobile, though, is when they launch on mobile, it's like, well, I'm going to buy it anyway. And I'll probably get around to playing it sooner than on something like on my Switch. So Minute seems cool. Everyone seems to like it. And coming to mobile soon.
What's always wild to me about Devolver Digital is that they're able to sell merch for games that like they've only just announced.
Right.
Or like there's just a trailer of and stuff like that. Like the people like losing their minds buying like $15 pins for what is it, My Friend Pedro or whatever.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And some of their other games that like aren't even out yet. I'm just like, man, that is the power of good branding right there. That's
You know, good on them though too. They really focus on like trying to have quality games and stuff, which is good. So
Well, I would hope so as a publisher. Yeah. So speaking of these, like one, I always like games like this that have some kind of like interesting time mechanic, and that like each level is a minute or other things like that. I recently got turned on to this game called 1 Hour, One Life. Have you heard of this?
Yeah, there's a mobile port.
Is there? Is it?
Yeah.
Is it official? Like, does it connect?
It's official.
But does it connect to the?
It does.
Does it?
The desktop game? Well, actually, don't quote me on that because it might. I'm pretty sure it's the same servers, but it might actually be separate servers. But it is an actual official thing.
Yeah. So here's the thing. As I understand it, I need to actually check this out to see if you actually connect to the main servers, because like, so the game is open source. Like, you can just download it for free.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if the mobile port is made by the same person or if it's just someone else that put it up.
And I'm pretty sure it's a different guy made it, but it's sanctioned by the guy that makes the desktop version. So I think it's, you know, on the up and up like that. We've posted about it before. Let me see. Let me pull anything up. I think we even reviewed it.
Really interesting
concept for a game, though, where you basically live an entire in-game life in 1 hour. And then can be reborn basically, but you're reborn and other people that are playing the game, it's like an MMO, have to like help you survive long enough for you to be on your own and stuff. Like you have to heavily rely on other people
It's really weird. Yeah, like you see you do the tutorial, which takes like 20 minutes because it's a very involved game. And then you wait to be born. So when you're waiting to be born, like what you're waiting for is like another character that like gets, I've never survived long enough to have my own kids. So I don't know how it works, but it's a story of my life. Right. So you get born and you have like this like parent that's like carrying you around and like feeding you and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And what's really interesting to me is that like you, as a baby, like you can only type like one letter.
Yeah.
And then like as you get older, you could type like two letters.
Yeah.
So it's crazy because like as a new player, particularly like your parent will be like telling you to do stuff and like you don't know what to do and like you can't communicate back to them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you get like three letters at least. Then I can type like WUT.
Yeah.
Or IDK.
Yeah.
Or something like that. So it's.
No, it's a really crazy concept for a game. Definitely an interesting spin on like, you know, a survival game or whatever. But yeah, we actually reviewed the mobile version. If you look up 1 hour, one life on Tetra Arcade, you can find a review for it.
When did we and post that?
I think it's just 1hour1life.com is the main website where you can play the desktop version and stuff like that. The guy that makes it, he updates it like every week or something too, and adds in all sorts of crazy stuff. But it's kind of interesting to see how like the society evolves as more and more people, you know, get born and grow up into a server or whatever, to see if they become like cooperative kind of utopia or if they all try to like kill each other or what, because it's very hard to stay alive.
And like, so, you can even die in the fucking tutorial. Like, I failed the tutorial the first time I played. Like, I starved to death in the tutorial of a game.
Yeah. But like, it's kind of savage too, because, you know, food and stuff is so hard to come by that if you see somebody that's got some, you could be like, man, I'm going to kill this guy and take all this food, because otherwise I'm going to die.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a really interesting thing. So, yeah, I would totally suggest people check that out.
Yeah. So, anyway, sorry for the derail. I didn't realize that. That's like another game that, like, I didn't realize came out so long ago. I just recently stumbled across, and everyone was like, oh, yeah, that's old news, dude.
Yeah, no, that happens, though. I mean, welcome to mobile. So, moving along, news story-wise, I just wanted to mention this real quick. Hi-Rez Studios, who is a pretty awesome developer, makes Smite and Paladins and a couple other games for, like, desktop. And then recently those came out on Switch, too. They started up, like, a playtesting program called Hi-Rez Labs, where you can sign up and they will, you know, get you in to beta test console games and PC games, and they also mentioned mobile explicitly. So it sounds like, you know, they're also kind of one of those companies that throws a lot of stuff at the wall and all of it sticks.
I feel like these guys are like desperately trying to figure out like a mobile game that people want to play.
Well, I think so. They released Paladin Strike, which is kind of like a top down, MOBA-fied take on their full Paladins game, which is actually like a first person team shooter. And, it seems like it's done okay. Like, I think it has a pretty active community and stuff like that. The game itself is super fun.
Yeah.
So I could see it, you know, succeeding.
Paladins on the Switch is surprisingly good, too. Like, it runs
I downloaded it before, but never really messed with it once it became free or whatever. But
I couldn't get into it, though. Like, I played it and was like, oh, this is a really, really good Switch port. Mm-hmm. But, like, as someone that's just played, like, a lot of Overwatch, like, it just kind of feels like the Aldi generic version of...
Yeah.
Overwatch, which
I think a lot of people feel that same way. It got criticized a lot when it first, you know, came out or whatever. But yeah, so it sounds like they at least want to create some more stuff for mobile, or maybe bring, you know, I don't know if Smite would work on touchscreen, maybe iPad, but you know.
Yeah, I mean, with a controller.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. So anyway, if you want to sign up and potentially test out some Hi-Rez Studios stuff, I know there's a lot of people that like beta testing, you know, in our community. Mm. Check out this story that has a link to their Hi-Rez Labs website. You kind of fill out a little thing, and you know, they'll throw you in the mix. And if there happens to be some mobile stuff down the line, you'll be first to know and try it out. So that's kind of a cool thing, I thought.
Yeah. The Hi-Rez people have always been awesome to us, so definitely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let me check that out. So what's the deal with this fighting EX layer alpha?
So this was, I thought, super interesting. So Monday was April Fool's Day, which is the dumbest day in the world.
The worst day on the internet.
And, yeah. But I think the bright side of April Fool's Day is all the companies that like create something as a joke for April Fool's, but it's actually secretly a real thing. You know, ThinkGeek, I think, is pretty famous for doing stuff where they create something super silly as an April Fool's Day joke, and everyone's like, you should really make that. And then, like, a week later, they're all, hey, we are.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what this Fighting EX Layer Alpha is. And Fighting EX Layer is kind of has an interesting history. It's done by this Japanese company called Arika, who back in the 90s created Street Fighter EX, which was like the 3D versions of Street Fighter, for those that remember. And it featured Street Fighter characters, obviously, but then they created a bunch of original characters for that series, too. And it spanned, I think there was three of them originally, and then the series kind of stopped. And so a couple of years ago on April Fool's Day, they teased this thing called Fighting EX Layer, which would be like the spiritual successor to Street Fighter EX. But they didn't have, you know, the rights to the Street Fighter people anymore. But they were going to bring back, basically make a new fighting game using all of their original characters from Street Fighter EX, which they did still own. And so they teased that as an April Fool's joke one time a couple years ago, and everyone was like, no, you should actually make that. And they're like, okay, well, let's do it.
Yeah.
That game actually released last year on like PS4, I think only PS4. And it might possibly be in the works for other systems or PC or whatever. So that was kind of like one of those cool stories of like an April Fool's joke coming to reality, that people actually wanted to see this joke thing become real. And so this April Fool's, their joke was, hey, look, we brought the game to mobile with these crazy like gesture controls or whatever. But it's actually a real game you can download and play. It wasn't just like a funny trailer. And the shocking thing about all this is that it works super duper well.
Yeah, they've really swipe-based fighters have been ultra popular.
You know, like... ultra popular, and this one definitely is like kind of in between being like a straight up fighting game with virtual buttons, and then like a totally streamlined swipe fighter that kind of takes away a lot of the stuff you can normally do in a fighting game. This is kind of in between those two, and it works shockingly well. So the only problem is that it's called, you know, Fighting EX Layer Alpha, and it's very much a demo. It only has four characters, and you know, I think you can only fight on the one stage, which is like a training stage or whatever. So my hope is that they are actually serious about this thing, and they just kind of wanted to release this demo that they've got and see the reception to it, and that their plan is to release it with all the same characters from, you know, the console version and with all the same levels, and basically make it like a really cool touchscreen port of their console fighting game.
Yeah.
Which I think would be awesome. So hopefully that's what they're doing. But for now, this Fighting EX Layer Alpha is on the App Store for free to check out and play. And you can see how well a fighting game can play with gesture controls when developers actually put a lot of thought into how to do that.
Yeah. What was the most annoying thing that you saw in April Fool's this year that you were like, oh, God damn it?
Nothing springs to mind, but I also didn't go searching for anything. Nothing. I didn't get tricked by anything. I also wasn't like, you know, there's a lot of lists that are like, here were the best April Fool's jokes. And I was like, I don't even want to read that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. What about you?
Well, so you know that that blanket that I travel with, the Rumpel, R-U-M-P-L, if anyone doesn't know what it is. So I'm like weirdly into these. It's kind of like if you imagine like a really, really nice sleeping bag, but it's a blanket instead. Like that's kind of like the gist of it. And they like compact down really small, and they're really good for traveling. And like,
I want one of those actually.
So they sent out, like, I'm on their mailing list, cause every once in a while they like have a cool design that I like or whatever, that I'm always like, do I really need another one? I don't know, but that looks really cool. I'll think about it and then forget. So they sent out an email, or I don't remember if it was email or tweet or Facebook, whatever way I saw it, that they were doing like these crossover blankets with Game of Thrones, and they were doing Rumpels that had like each house sigils on it.
No way.
And I was like, damn, that's fucking awesome, dude. Like, all right, I'm finally in on buying another one of these blankets. Like, I just need to decide like which of these I want to buy. And then, like, you click, like, add to cart, and it's like, ha-ha, you dummy. Of course this isn't real.
See, that's a prime example of take that as, like, a market test.
Yeah.
And when people are all like, hell yeah, I'll give you money for this thing, be like, okay, it's going to be a real thing. Well, I guess for that, it's probably a lot trickier to get Game of Thrones licensing.
I mean, so the reason that I fell for it is because Adidas actually did a Game of Thrones shoe collaboration.
No way.
So they're releasing, or they actually already have released a set of like six different Ultra Boosts that are so they're like themed, like this, the shoe color and the stripes are themed after like whatever the color of the Game of Thrones house is, and then like the back has this like little tag that sticks out that has like the saying on it. So I bought Lindsay a pair for the Lannister house because she likes everything that's like red and gold. So the shoes are red with gold stripes. And on the back, it says "Hear Me Roar" on them,
sweet,
which is from the show.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had just bought that, and
so
and
it made like a lot of sense that there might be another.
Yeah, I was like, oh damn, like this, I'm gonna spend so much money because I love Game of Thrones. I love all these other products, and it's gonna be like this really cool thing. And then, I don't know. I feel like if you're going to do a good April Fool's Day, like everyone should be laughing, including like the person that fell for it.
instead of like, because there's been like so many over the years where it's like, ha ha, dummy, of course this thing you really wanted doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know, that sucks. Anyway.
Yeah.
That's all I have to say about that.
So the final news story I was going to hit was that Sega has announced that Sonic at the Olympic Games is going to come to iOS and Android next summer. Summer of next year, actually, not next summer. So that's kind of cool that, you know.
Is that a game series people care about?
I don't know. The only thing I really remember from this series is how shocked everyone was that Mario and Sonic were in a game together.
Was this the first game
a couple years removed from Sega, you know, bowing out of the hardware race and licensing their stuff to other consoles and stuff. So I remember when it was Mario and Sonic at the Olympics was like the biggest thing ever. So just Sonic at the Olympics, I have no idea what,
you know, I always looked at these Olympic games as like, I don't know, just like a weird like cash in almost of like,
yeah,
all right, like, yeah, sure. This will be in the $20 Walmart bargain bin as soon as
that very well could be. Yeah,
but no, I remember like now that you mention it, like that was a big deal. I think that was the very first game that had like both Mario and Sonic in it, which like, holy fuck, can you imagine if you go back in time to like, I don't know, like 1992 or whenever Sonic first came out and like the Super Nintendo and Genesis rivalry was rolling and you're like, you know what? In like 15 years, Mario and Sonic are going to be in the same forgettable Olympics game that no one's going to care about.
Yeah, I know. People would tar and feather you, but yeah, kind of crazy. So I don't know. I guess it's cool that that series is trying to come to mobile where it seems like it would be a really good fit. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess it is. So I guess it is Mario and Sonic and not just Sonic, but whatever. Look forward to that next year.
So you want to talk about the Power Beats? Are you excited for these?
I'm still trying to figure it out. So these leaked already.
Announcement a leak? I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it leaked because there was reference to it in the new version of iOS or something weird like that. But anyway, Beats, which is owned by Apple, announced the Power Beats Pro, which are their Power Beats line of
over the ear headphones,
but they are truly wireless, no wires whatsoever. The normal kind have.
You have the old ones, right?
No, I have Beats X, which are actually different. The Power Beats are more geared towards like workout people. So they have like the hook that goes completely over your ear. And then the previous version had like a shorter sort of cord that connected on the back of your neck. Basically, it rested on your neck.
Yeah, but that's what you have.
No, those are not what I have. Oh. I have Beats X, which are...
let me look at what these Power Beats look like. Oh, okay.
Straight buds that go directly in your ear and that's it. The Power Beats are the ones that kind of hook over and are made for not falling out when you're, you know, running and jumping and stuff. Very much sports geared. So anyway, these new ones are just the earbuds themselves that go into your ear, kind of like AirPods, except if AirPods don't work for you and they always fall out or they don't fit your ear right or whatever, I think these will have a much better chance of fitting in your ear. Because
these are substantially larger, though.
They're substantially larger, but they actually don't look too bad when they have some photos on the Beats website of them in people's ears. And they're pretty low profile even when they're in.
Yeah.
But they are much larger than a AirPod. And the case itself is much larger as a consequence of that. So, you know, one of the coolest things about the AirPods is how convenient they are. And you can kind of easily, tug the thing out of your ear, pop it out.
Yeah, I got it.
It's with you everywhere you go because it's a tiny little case, you know, whatever.
My pocket right now.
Yeah, exactly. So the case for these looks like it's probably like a good 4 times larger. Like it would be hard to even squeeze in your pocket.
Yeah.
So I think once again, these are more like workout focused things where they think, oh, well, you'll just toss this charging case in your bag.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Throw the earbags or the earbuds in when you're working out and that's it. What's cool about them, though, is it does have physical physical volume controls on both earbuds on either side, so you can control it with either hand, and then you can press the B logo, I think is for doing additional stuff, answering calls and things like that. And it'll work with Hey Siri, and it has the new H1 chip that the AirPods 2 have, which is kind of like my biggest reason for getting the Beats X was because they had the W1.
Yeah.
And connecting them is just a dream.
So do you know what the difference is between the H1 and the W1? Is it just like an evolution of the W1, or is it like a new thing entirely?
I think it's an improved version. That's, they did some things specifically headphone related so that it's going to handle switching devices easier than the W1. But that also leads me to believe that they probably have plans for a W1 to use it in other ways and other devices down the road or something like that. Mm-hmm. So that's what they want to denote, but one is like very headphone specific. So I don't know. Or maybe they were like, why the hell do we name this thing W when it goes in headphones? We should have named it H. Let's name this one H.
It was like wireless one or something.
So I don't know. But whatever the case, just know that it has a magic Apple chip in it that makes it pairing and connecting it to devices super, super easy. Well, iOS devices.
Yeah.
if you have Android or something like that, it's straight Bluetooth.
But interesting thing about this is that, to me anyway, is that Beats is always, the Beats lineup of headphones have always seemed to like straddle this weird line where it's like, yeah, like we got the W1 stuff in this, but like it charges over micro USB and you can totally use it on your Android phone and all this other stuff. Whereas this, the new Powerbeats Pros are the first one where it's like, no, this charges over Lightning.
Yeah. Well, no, mine can charge over Lightning too.
Oh, do yours too? Oh, okay.
I thought your Powerbeats 3s do too.
I have the Solo 3.
Solo 3s.
So that was the first headphone that Beats released that had the W1 in it. It charges over micro USB.
Oh, it's not Lightning?
No.
That's interesting. I wonder, I guess, you know, it would be pretty dumb if you were an Android person and you got these and you're like, damn, like I gotta carry this extra stupid Lightning thing around.
That's where I'm at right now with this thing.
So it is kind of interesting, but I think Beats' focus is like, hey, we want to cater to iOS people that have iPhones and iPads and Macs more than anyone else anyway. And we also, you know, you can buy them if you don't use those things and they'll still work just like regular Bluetooth headphones. But, you know, you're not going to get all the fancy stuff. It's just one more reason for them to be like, well, maybe you should be using an iPhone.
So I'm in a situation where like, so I got the Beats Solo 3s, whatever ones with the H or the W1 headphone. And mine are like embarrassing because I use them like they're super fucked up. But like it's hard to get mad about it because like I use those every single day. And have thrown them in my bag and have taken them with me like everywhere I go.
Right.
Whenever I travel anywhere, like they're smushed in my backpack and all this other stuff. So like the hinges are broken.
Yeah.
The like leather on the left side's like coming off the ear thing. And so I need to buy something new because they've reached a point where they just kind of look embarrassing.
Are you interested in something like this then?
I don't know. Like, so here's my thing. Like what I like about the Solo 3s is, like, so they don't have noise cancellation, but they do have a reasonable amount of like audio isolation and that like you can't really hear too much of what's going on around you. And like my gym plays this like obnoxious 80s playlist that's always way too loud. And like it's hard to use my AirPods because like you get like no audio isolation there. So it's like I'm listening to like a mixture of whatever I'm trying to like watch or listen to plus like Eric Clapton.
Right.
Which is less than ideal. So I don't know, like I'm curious to, I guess it depends like what the return policy is on these, because I guess I wouldn't mind like buying them to try it out
to see because these ones do have some sound isolation stuff, so I don't know, I think it'd be worth checking out. I mean, how do you feel about over the ear hooks and stuff like that?
I don't mind any of that stuff, you know. It's just a matter of like, I really, really, really like the W1 stuff, and those Beats headphones have been amazing. I just have like used them to the point that they've like disintegrated.
I was actually torn between the previous Power Beats that had the W1 chip, but they still had the cord in between them. I wanted to get those, but those were $200, and the Beats X that I got were on sale for like $100. And so that kind of made my decision for me because they both had the W1 chip, and that's kind of the main thing I cared about. But I liked the lower, I liked the shorter cord and stuff of these Power Beats, and I kind of liked the hook. because you know that they're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
But although I love my BeatStax, I'm super happy with them. But I would consider getting these, but not for $250. If they ever like went on sale, I'd probably consider checking them out. But I'm pretty happy with my BeatStax. So
yeah, they might show up at Costco. Costco had the Beats for a while for way cheaper. I'm in this annoying situation with mine where like the Apple Store will like totally refurbish them for like $150.
That point, you might as well buy.
But it's like, yeah, it's like, man, that's like so close to just buying a new pair. I might as well just wait and see if they do like a H1 version, like a Beat Solo 4.
Which I feel like they probably will, but probably not till like towards the end of the year. Because if these are coming out in May, they're probably not going to want to immediately be like, also other new headphones are out.
I'll just own my taped up headphones for a little while longer. Because I know as soon as I'm like, I'll just buy these Powerbeats Pros, whatever. Like that's when they'll announce it. That's just how things work.
Yeah.
So like last thing we really have on the list to talk about for new stuff is the cancellation of AirPower.
Yeah.
This was like the funniest thing when it happened because like, so it was what, last Friday, right?
I think so. Yeah.
So woke up in the morning, was like looking at Twitter and everyone was like, I don't even know who started this, but it was like, oh, AirPower is going to be released today. It's just going to be like a Friday sleeper. Like they're just going to put it up on the Apple Store, not say anything and everything else. And everyone, you know, of course, like the speculation engine went wild of like, oh, how much is going to be? Like, am I going to buy one? Like, you know, how's it going to work? And all this other stuff. And it was so funny because like everyone spent the day like having that discussion of like, I'm going to buy one. I don't want it. I'm not going to buy it. It's going to be too expensive, blah, blah, blah. Right. And then Apple was just like, yeah, it's canceled. Yeah. Like that was the prestige of the day.
Yeah, yeah. it's definitely, I don't want to say unprecedented, but I mean, it's super unlike Apple to, first of all, announce something and show it without being sure that you can deliver a product at all.
Well, here's what's wild about this, though, is that the new AirPods on the back like tell you to charge them on your AirPower station if you get the wireless one.
Yeah.
Like, so this, like, this had to get canceled, like, I mean, like, how much lead time could they possibly have had on like making that packaging? Like a month, maybe?
Within a month, I bet.
I don't know.
Yeah.
To have it be like, go from like, oh yeah, this is coming out and we're so certain that it's, that's how we're going to tell people to charge the new AirPods to like, yeah, this is just canceled.
Right. Yeah. It's really crazy to me that this is a thing that even happened. Like, who let this happen? This is something Apple would never have let happen before.
Yeah.
And as much as I hate dragging out the Steve would have never let this happen thing, it's totally true in this case, though. Like, if he didn't know for certain that they could deliver this product, they wouldn't have shown it on stage, let alone have it be on product packaging, you know, a week before it gets canceled.
So I read a pretty interesting post on Reddit of someone that claimed to be like someone that works on just like wireless power stuff just in general. I mean, who knows if they're bullshitting or not, but they, you know, one of those people that either are exceeding bullshitter with very believable stuff or like knew what they were talking about. Who their theory was what happened with this was that they made it, the prototypes all worked, the prototypes all look great, everything else. And then like they sent it over to do all the FCC approval. And like once they started like measuring like the amount of like electromagnetic interference was coming off this thing and everything else, they were just like, whoa, what the fuck are you doing? You can't make this. Because
that would make sense.
Apparently, like the reason you only ever see chargers that have like two or three coils in them is because like packing more than that in it just creates this like interference like bubble that kind of like just fucks everything up around it. Which seemed plausible to me. I don't know. And like they were supposed to like, so the magic of AirPower was that there was supposed to be like 24 different coils. So it didn't matter where you put anything. It could like recognize where it was and like fire up that coil for the wireless charging, which I guess worked in a laboratory. But once you started measuring it, you know, as far as like, cause you don't want this thing that's like going to be on your nightstand. Like you put your phone near it and like it, you know, like your alarm clock, like no longer works and stuff like that, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So I don't know.
That's crazy. That makes a lot of sense if that was the case and that that was the stopping point. That would also explain why they felt confident, you know, showing and stuff.
Because like historically the way that Apple has handled all their FCC approval stuff, because that becomes like this weird, like public record, cause there's been some iPhone stuff that's leaked because they've sent it in for approval and then like, you know, that's how we found out like the shape of, you know, like the iPhone 5, I think.
Yeah.
So they sent stuff out to approval at the absolute last second. So that would make a lot of sense if that's what happened. So I don't know. The interesting thing is that, so that Nomad company that makes like really high-end accessories, they've got a charger pad that just by dumb luck is big enough that it'll hold your iPhone and your wireless AirPods, and it has like a little holder for your Apple Watch.
Oh, they're probably selling.
Oh my God, it's backordered for like months. Like this is like like a lottery ticket for the ages for these guys. It was like Apple being like, this is canceled, and like all these other tech blogs being like, hey, well, this thing is like 90% there. So
that's really funny, actually. Yeah, I don't know. I don't really care about the whole wireless charging stuff anyway. So I don't, I mean, I might have bought one of these. Also, you're supposed to be able to just like throw your iWatch on there or your Apple Watch on there and have it charged, which would have been nice. But I think if anything, I'm going to get, I have my little tiny circular coaster size Anker wireless charger.
Those are the best. Just buy, get, if anyone wants wireless charger, like just, just buy the $15 ones on Amazon. They all work the same.
Yeah. But I think if I ever upgraded from that, I get the one that has like the it kind of props your phone up, so you lay it on like an angled slab, so that you don't have to like hit sweet spot.
Right here.
Oh yeah, exactly like that. And then they make one that has like a Apple Watch charger built in next to it, which I think would be kind of cool too, to have them both on one thing, so then, you know, tidy up the old nightstand or whatever.
So the Anker one that I'm using right now is like that. It's kind of like puts your phone at like, I don't know what angle, you know, just enough that you're looking at it. But what I like about it is that like what's on my desk, like right in front of me, and I get an alert and like look at it, like it's at the proper angle for Face ID to just work.
Yeah, that's
cool. Really cool. Completely unintended side effect of a $15 Anker accessory I got on Amazon. Right.
I guess rip air power, if you were looking forward to that.
Well, honestly, I feel like Apple did everyone a solid, because people are going to buy this fucking $200 charging pad when they could buy like a dozen or more Anker pads and have them at every corner of their house.
Right. Yeah.
So whatever. All right. Well, so we are at about an hour. Do you want to talk about some games real quick? Or do you want
to... if we have the time to do that, let's do it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. You want to, unless you want to eat some lunch.
I am hungry. My main game I want to talk about is the new Orlando.
All right.
So
let's do it.
You know, I guess people that weren't around in the early days of the App Store, Orlando came out in late 2008, and was kind of like the first like, holy crap, somebody made something that's like very unique to the strengths of the iPhone, but it's not just like a mini game or like a tech demo type thing. It's like a full blown, high quality, high production value game. And kind of became the unofficial, you know, mascot of the iPhone for a long time, just because of these little Rolando characters are so cute. And so it's essentially a puzzle platformer, more platformer than puzzle, but definitely some puzzle elements where you tilt your iPhone to roll these guys through the levels, and then you can swipe to jump. And it works really well. Like, I know a lot of people are against tilt, but this game kind of is built with it in mind and kind of requires it. It's not the kind of game that you could also just slap some virtual buttons on and hope to be able to play it right. Especially later in the game, it has kind of like almost a Lemmings like flair where you're controlling, you know, multiple Rolandos in a certain level. You'll need to select and deselect certain ones depending on what you know, objective you need to complete. And, it definitely just wouldn't be right if you were just like hitting virtual buttons or whatever. So, the thing to remember is that this game originally came out when there was no iPad.
Yeah.
So it made a lot more sense, like, oh, your little iPhone, and before iPhones got big. So it made a lot more sense to kind of be tilting around your iPhone. And some of the levels actually require you to tilt all the way 360 degrees around to, you know, go through these, almost like the original Sonic the Hedgehog bonus levels. They're kind of like that. But you're actually tilting your phone all the way around and stuff. So if you've got like an iPad Pro, like this one, you're going to be like feeling like you're spinning one of those signs on a street corner or something like that. But so I can kind of understand where some people are like, dude, I don't want to do the tilt thing. I have this giant iPad. And if that's you, like maybe, you know, this isn't the game for you. It definitely feels better as an iPhone game. But so this is the Rolando Royal Edition, which going back into what we were talking about earlier, the original Rolando was never updated for modern devices or modern software.
Yeah, and Gmoco went under before.
Yeah, and Gmoco got an issue. You know, yeah, bought out, and Rolando kind of like went by the wayside as they became kind of this free to play powerhouse company. And so poor little Rolando, developer Hand Circus, Rolando got kind of lost to the ether of the iOS App Store. Developer Hand Circus got their hands back on the IP that they created and decided to remaster it, basically. So in the original, this game has kind of like 3D graphics and has sort of that 2.5D is what it's called look, where all the environments and stuff are in 3D, but it's actually like a 2D game. The original was all just flat. And so it's really kind of striking to play through this game because it just looks so good. They generally didn't mess with the physics or anything like that, so it should play pretty much the same. I think here and there they might have messed with some level designs to kind of make improvements that they've discovered. But more or less, they just kind of took advantage of the newer hardware that they had at their disposal to add, you know, a lot of cool effects and stuff and make this just a really fancier looking version of the original Rolando. And it's so fun playing through this game again. Like, there's a lot of levels where I'm like, holy crap, I remember this level. Or, you know, very specific moments in the game where I'm like, damn, you know, I remember that. Like,
yeah,
it's almost like playing a childhood game again in a lot of ways.
The first level to me was like, gave me like that same notion of like playing like World 1-1 in Mario.
Yeah, know? Totally. Where you're like, holy crap, it's I'm like, playing this again. I remember
every part of this.
Yeah. But, so yeah, it's just, I haven't really smiled as big as I have when playing through this new Rolando, just because it brings back so many memories. But I also think it's just a good thing for people nowadays to be like, oh man, here's a really good, unique, original iPhone game, that you can play now if you never played it back then. There's a lot of people that, you know, have mobile games now that didn't have mobile phones or smartphones, you know, back then. So I feel like there's a potential to kind of introduce this to a whole new audience of people. I think you're screwed.
I think I really messed up.
You gotta reset the level. But anyway, yeah, it's just a ton of fun. Just go into it knowing like, hey, I'm gonna have to tilt my device to play.
Yeah, I first loaded this up on my iPad because I usually play most of my games on the iPad. And right. I was like, man, I don't remember this like not being fun.
Right, yeah.
Which is like really weird.
Because you're holding this big honking thing. But definitely plays a lot better on the iPhone, but it's not unplayable on the iPad. I wouldn't let that totally scare you off. Especially if you go into the settings, you can increase the tilt sensitivity all the way up. And then you have to tilt much less than you normally would. So it's not quite as crazy. But yeah, Rolando is just a total classic. We just posted a review, 5-star review of it. A really nice in-depth review, actually. So definitely give that a read. Check it out. And I think this game's $2.99 or something ridiculous like that. It's super cheap for what you get. Really nice, lengthy game. Totally paid. And you can kind of see a slice of iPhone gaming history in sort of this remastered form. It's just a total delight to play.
Is there any drama surrounding a 5-star score for Rolando? Because that was a thing.
Did we give it 5 stars back in the day too? Probably. Yeah,
and they were running a huge sight skin at the time.
Oh. Whoops. No, let's see. There's probably not even a single comment. Nope.
No drama.
I guess no 10 years makes a difference.
Yeah, I guess so.
But yeah. Wow. I'm not even if someone was upset about it, they can sit on it because we're allowed to 5 stars easy. Yeah, super fun. I can't wait to play through the rest of it over the weekend. That's going to be what I'm doing.
Yeah, I really hope this game does well for Hand Circus because this is just like Me such too. A labor of love. It's bananas.
It sounds like it's probably already pretty likely they're going to do this same remastering work on the second game because they've sort of hinted towards that a couple times. And when you get right down to it, it's like, you know, it's a lot less work to like remaster a game that's already designed because, you know, a lot of level design and stuff like that. Not that it's no work at all. I don't want to diminish what they've done, but, you know, as opposed to like trying to create something from scratch. So it sounds like that you know, this game already has gotten enough positive reception that they'll do it with the second game. But what I think would be killer is if the announced and shown but never released Rolando 3 ever made.
Oh, there you go.
That would just blow my mind if 10 years later, you know, or 10 plus years later, that third game actually saw the light of day someday. That would just tickle me to no end.
Yeah, we'll see. But my concern is, like, just because, like, everyone in our circle is excited for this, like, does that mean that, like, it's going to be an App Store success? Like, I really hope so.
I don't know. I haven't looked to see if it's got any sort of featuring or anything like that, but it damn well should, if Apple knows what they're doing. Because, I mean, this is, like, the epitome of, like, a unique iPhone game that uses all the strengths of the iPhone, like accelerometer, touchscreen, and it looks super good. It's super family-friendly, but also, like, you know, a pretty nice hardcore-y kind of platformer for gamer-y gamers. It's just kind of like a total package sort of thing. This is so weird watching you play this level. This is one of the ones where you'd have to tilt your device all the way around, but it's not... because you're capturing, it's not... It just looks like you're floating through water or something.
Also, my capture cable is, like, super sensitive, so it's, like...
Not super liking that you're tilting your device all over. But anyway, yeah, Rolando... One of my favorites. Very happy to be playing it.
Yeah.
I'm going to see if it's featured now.
It better be.
New games we love. Top billing. That's nice.
It's, let's see if it's charting anywhere, though.
Yeah.
Games. New games we love.
I guess it just came out on Wednesday, so. Top free, top paid. I don't see.
It's number 23 top paid in US.
That's not bad.
Yeah, not bad. Not amazing.
We'll see. But yeah, hopefully the word gets out and this does okay for them. Hand Circus, I think, is a pretty tiny team too, so maybe it doesn't have to, you know, be a million seller for them to be a success.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's fair.
Yeah.
So, all right, well, drive this podcast.
yeah, it looks like we're running a little long.
Into the garage.
Yep. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening and watching the podcast this week. As I said at the top, we are primarily supported through Patreon. So if you like what we're doing and want to see us continue being able to do it, please consider supporting us through patreon.com/touch arcade, where you can give as little as $1 a month and you'll get access to cool things like a video version of this podcast, where you can see all the games we're playing and the news stories we're talking about and our bright, shiny faces. And if you're not into Patreon or you just want to find and a additional way to support us, please consider doing your Amazon shopping through toucharcade.com/Amazon, where we'll get a little tiny slice of the things that you would be buying anyway. And together it can kind of add up and make a real difference to us, a tiny independent video games website that wants to keep doing what it's doing. So other than that, you can find us on social media stuff, twitter.com/toucharcade, twitch.tv/TouchArcade, where we do some game streaming a couple times a week, and discord.gg/TouchArcade, where you can find our Discord chat, which is always lively with mobile games chat and developer stuff, all types of good things happening in Discord. And pretty much put any website into a browser and put Touch Arcade on the end of it, and you'll probably find something to do with us. So thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you next week on another episode of the Touch Arcade Show.